Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative John Kochelko, liberal John McDonough, and Tim Krolaitis of the Tea Party. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the National Radio Hall of Fame Gallery in Chicago. Nice to have you with us. Toll-free lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb at museum.tv is the address. And also, if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com. A reminder, if you miss the show any week, again, we have it for you, both in audio and video format, for you to listen and watch throughout the weeks and months that follow. But again, nice to have you with us this evening. And again, at the top of the show, my thanks to Dan Proft for sitting in last week while I was away. And I don't know whether he mentioned this on the broadcast last night or last week, but I had the great pleasure of attending Betty White's 90th birthday party last Sunday night in Hollywood at the Biltmore Hotel. It'll be a special on NBC coming up, I think, either tomorrow night or night after tomorrow. And it was really for the president of a broadcast museum to be in the presence of not only Betty White, but Carol Burnett and Mary Tyler Moore and Carl Reiner and Ed Asner and really the giants of the industry. It was quite a magic moment. I thank Betty for extending the invitation. But that's why I was not with you last week. But I did want to talk. So I have a couple of weeks of political questions that I want to talk about. First of all the focus of news right now obviously is on the state of South Carolina. And as of this moment, let's take a look at what the polls are suggesting there that is going to come up later this week when they will have their primary. This is the Real Clear Politics. This is a combination poll, and it has Mitt Romney in first place at 26.7%, Newt Gingrich in second place, within striking distance at 22%. Ron Paul and Rick Santorum basically tied at just under 15%, and Rick Perry and John Huntsman just at 5.7. So sort of out of the picture. I guess the big shift in the political race happened yesterday in Texas. A lot of the conservative Christian religious leaders got together, and they decided, it took them three ballots to do it, but they decided that they were going to sort of put their endorsement and their stamp of approval on Rick Santorum, because they think he is the most electable of those Christian conservatives that are in the race. Tim Krolaitis, let me ask you this. You are our Tea Party representative. I'm going to ask you about the Tea Party in just a few moments. But again, is it too late in your view to sort of coalesce around Rick Santorum with less than a week to go? Is it really going to have any significant movement in your view?
Conventional wisdom would indicate that it's probably too late. But it is, this election cycle and then how's it's been operating in the primary with the dips and the drops and the increases of certain candidates coming up. Anything can happen in this primary, so nothing would surprise me.
But now, in the last year since you've been a semi-regular on this program, we've been talking about, this was obviously before anybody voted. We were talking about the power and influence of the Tea Party. Correct. And the Tea Party is going to do this, and the Tea Party is going to do that, and they're going to flex their muscles. It's been a big bust for you folks.
It depends what you say bust. If you look at the poll that you just pointed to, I think there's 50% of that poll would indicate that there's a Gingrich, there's a Santorum, and that there's a Ron Paul. And that far supersedes the.
But they're not likely to get the nomination.
Well, that's because there's too many people in the race. I mean, the reality is the establishment candidate has what was it, 27%?
Yeah. 20.
Okay, well, that's not too impressive, right? There's activity going on. That means that there's over 60% he's not getting.
But what does it say about the power and influence of the movement when the movement can't come to the conclusion that the math is against them? As long as they're dividing their votes three or four different ways, which is the way it's been. It's now down to about three ways.
That's where I think the problem is. Not necessarily when people want to say that the Tea Party movement is over. It's not. It is engaged. It's engaging in this process. What I would ask you is, why can't the establishment pull more than 27% for Romney.
John Kuchelko is our card-carrying Republican tonight. First of all, let's weigh in on the Tea Party. Much to do about nothing?
No, I think the Tea Party is still important, but I think it's much more possible for them to influence elections at the district level for Congress or at the state level for governors or senatorial candidates. It's a different ballgame when you're talking about President of the United States. So I think they're out there. I think they're out there in each of these states, but they're conservatives. I think that they're basically conservatives, and they're going to be casting their ballots along with a lot of other conservatives in the Republican Party. And I don't think it's as focused and as organized as you would expect in 2010 when they were out there trying to influence individual races in separate states.
John McDonough is our card-carrying Democrat tonight and our liberal. Your assessment of the Tea Party and again, would you say much ado about nothing?
Looking at it from my perspective, I mean, just about anybody on that list would seem to be acceptable to Tea Parties, Tea Party people, and conservatives. The only thing that's working against Romney is his record in Massachusetts, but he's certainly talking as good a game as any of the other conservative candidates. And the only question is he believable? Well, that's for Republicans to decide. But Santorum, Gingrich, Ron Paul. All his special issues, of course, but I mean, these are all.
But early in the campaign, all of the anointed Tea Party favorites, they have fallen by the wayside, or they have not.
Ian Bachman and
Sarah Palin obviously chose not to run; she was the first one, and then Bachman, and then she went nowhere, and then Rick Perry was going to be the great savior of the party again because of this Tea Party situation.
Well, the Tea Party people always took pride in the fact that they're so decentralized, and now they're in effect paying the consequences of decentralization.
Yeah, it's a malleable. I would say it's very malleable because when those votes didn't disappear, they're not gone; they just shifted. I mean, Perry basically imploded. Bachman, you know, other than a straw poll, never really got.
But Santorum was never at any of the. Santorum's name was never mentioned.
Well, that's because the guy ran. Basically, he ran an Iowa campaign on $30,000 of advertising. So maybe his message didn't even reach the Tea Party. But again, he was competing with other people of like mind with a lot more resources to get their message. So as you saw the messenger critique, you saw that shift in the polls.
And where do the Tea Party people that you know, where do they stand right now on Mitt Romney?
Mitt Romney is considered the establishment candidate. He is viewed as far superior.
Those are fighting words.
Well, that's not necessarily bad, but he's far superior than Barack Obama. So from what I could see, there's going to be an energy to get Barack Obama out of office that's going to benefit Mitt Romney.
So
we'll coalesce around the winner. I mean, any of these candidates, and you've heard this ad nauseum, would be far preferential in the Tea Party movement than what we have in office now.
And will the enthusiasm be enough to propel
them? Yeah, the enthusiasm.
That's always the concern.
Well, again, down ballot races, you know, you have a lot of activity in the Tea Party movement in local elections that weren't there in the past.
1-800-723-8289. Take America's political pulse on the campaign season and the Tea Party. If you're a member, do you feel that you've had much influence in this race? And again, where do you come down on Mitt Romney? We're going to talk more about South Carolina coming up this week when we roll on from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We'll go to calls at 1-800-723-8289 in just a few moments. But obviously, we've had a split decision as to what came out of Iowa, with obviously Romney winning there. It was a split decision only in the way in which the media played it. Obviously, Romney won in Iowa with only eight votes over Rick Santorum, won more comfortably.
You have to consider that a tie, don't you?
Yeah, pretty much so. But Romney did get the headline, and mm-hmm. Win is a win, and obviously he won in New Hampshire, where everyone expected him to win. So the question is. Is he the inevitable nominee? I would say at this particular moment, the answer is yes. And if you're a regular listener to this show, you will know I have been consistently wrong this year. I have consistently got enthused about a candidate and where they thought they were going. I've been wrong twice, and I was wrong a few years ago with Giuliani. So I'm not the most accurate projector at this particular time. However, let's look at the history of South Carolina, because South Carolina is really what usually propels the winner. In 1980, Ronald Reagan won there. That's when he took the microphone in that famous debate. Obviously, 4 years later, he was the incumbent president and sailed through there. In 1998, George Bush won there. And again, 4 years later, he was the incumbent, won again. Bob Dole in 1996. These are people that all went on to be the ultimate nominee of the party. George W. Bush beat back John McCain in 2000. 4 years later, again, he was the incumbent. And 4 years ago, John McCain beat the field, including Mitt Romney. And so whoever wins since 1980, whoever wins South Carolina, wins it all. And again, at this particular moment, the only one that appears to be within some striking distance is Newt Gingrich. But I would say that if Newt does not knock him off later this week in South Carolina, this race is over. I mean, the media can, you know, they can try to milk it to try to, you know, get people interested, but it's over. And I guess my question to you would be, would it be good for the other candidates to basically throw in the towel? Or do you think that Newt Gingrich, just because of his personal animosity for Mitt Romney, is he going to just keep going and going and going like Jerry Brown did against Bill Clinton in 1992? He didn't give up. He was still fighting at the convention.
I think Newt will stay in the race.
Do you want him to stay in the race? What's the point?
Not necessarily. Well, yeah, what's the point? They're politicians. That's the problem. But they're, for whatever their own reason is, there'll be a handful that stay in the race. But you know what? What I see is the attacks coming on Romney are basically refining him for them when he gets into the general. I mean, this is something that we're seeing, and it might be helpful.
John, do you think it's helpful? You think it's helpful because obviously most people, I think, assumed that in a campaign race, Romney, if he was the nominee, was going to get beaten up big time on his past, on the way he looks, the way he talks, the whole image of who he is. So is it good to get all that stuff out, including Bain Capital and what he did at Bain Capital? Is it good to get it out and talk about it in January and February so it's going to be old news come September?
I think there's some of that, and I think there's some overemphasis on all this. You know, the notion that these attack ads that Gingrich is launching, particularly Gingrich, and I must admit I've often in the past thought very highly of Newt Gingrich. He's a very smart guy. He's very articulate. He's a great debater. But I think he runs the risk right now of destroying whatever remaining credibility he may have if he wants any future in Republican politics. But I don't know that in the fall that any independent or centrist voter is going to think twice about voting for Mitt Romney because of something that Newt Gingrich said in January. I think there's this overemphasis that these ads are going to do tremendous damage.
Well, Obama,
Romney. I don't think
going to be repeating that same message, isn't
he, right,
John?
Well, unless the public is just so damn sick of hearing about it.
Do you agree with my point that maybe
I do think unless they can come up with a second or third layer of that whole issue. I mean, as I recall, when I think when the Swift voters, they saved their heavy artillery for the election campaign, not for the not in the
that
primary.
Came late. That's right.
And
it came
so,
late.
And that was where they needed to shoot their guns. And
so Newt may have helped Romney.
In a way, yeah, I think so. I think so.
I think you're right. Yeah. I mean, by getting it all out now, it's by October, that's going to be an old story. And if the Democrats try to rehash it, I think it's going to produce yawns. We heard all of that. I don't know that it's going to have that much effect.
Does, in your view, because many of the people that you work with and have spoken for on this program, Tea Party people, there is an element of anti-elitism, a pretty strong element of anti-elitism. Mm-hmm. You described it earlier as an establishment candidate.
Right.
So my question to you is, they may not vote for Obama, but are they going to hold their nose and vote for Romney, or are they just maybe not vote at all because of the enthusiasm level.
Yeah, I don't think people are going to stay home. It's more of an activist type nature. It's broken up into basically conservatives, social conservatives, economic conservatives, and libertarians. That's what you're seeing being played out right now. I think there's going to be they're much more concerned about where our nation is headed as a whole, and that targets Obama, and they want him out of office, no matter who he
is. It good? I want to get everybody's reaction. Start with you, John McDonough. Is it good for the country to have a real solid line between Obama's future and Romney's future? And in your view, is there a significant difference between those men?
Well, given the way Romney has been talking, in pursuit of the Republican nomination, sure, there's a big difference. He's attacking everything that Obama stands for, and that's pretty much the line that the Republican Party has been taking. I mean, sometimes it pushes them to rather, into rather, odd situations. Now, I don't say – I think I was coming home. I was driving, and I was listening to – I think it was Mark Levin. Now, I don't say Mark Levin is the voice of the Republican Party. But he was talking about the photograph of the Marines urinating on the corpses in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And he was exploding in the microphone about America apologizing and expressing regret for this. I mean, he said that America should be doing this. In other words, he was sort of in taking an oppositional position to something the administration has done, that is, sort of deplore that act. Mm-hmm. He has sort of put himself in the position of advocating something that's completely absurd. And
I don't know if anybody's actually advocating for it. I think you can make a rational point of view that we don't have to overdo our expression of apology. You have to recognize that those of us who don't have to face the all the difficulties that war involves, it's good for us to be a little circumspect in recognizing the pressure that our fighting forces are under. Let me give you an example. When the Allies crossed the borders of Germany in 1945 and they went into Germany proper, Churchill went out to visit the troops. And the convoy that Churchill was in, as they passed the German frontiers and the abandoned German fortifications, he asked the convoy to stop. And Winston Churchill, His Majesty's Prime Minister and First Lord of the Treasury, got out and did precisely onto the German fortifications what these Marines did to those bodies. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, this was masonry that he was relieving himself on and not dead bodies. But this is a man that is arguably one of the two greatest historical figures of the 20th century. Yet he did this. Now, it shows that in times of war, even a leader is under pressure and will do things that those of us sitting back, may reflect and say, well, this is really not something that we should do. Yeah. I think it was wrong. I think they should face justice for it. But I don't think we have to really go into paroxysms of apology to everybody for this.
Well, and I'm not saying Mark Levin was speaking for all conservatives and the entire party, but he seemed to be.
But the point is that Mitt Romney does not have the temperament. In other words, the red meat that he's throwing out now, which primarily is all about economic issues, mm-hmm. that's where he's throwing his red meat. He's not throwing a lot of red meat out there on the social issues.
No, that's true.
Now, he has spoken about it, and again, he's said just enough maybe to get some Republicans, to fall in line. But and I think on some of the issues, when he talks about his position on illegal immigration, frankly, I don't believe that he really believes what he says.
Well, abortion is the issue he's most visible on the cultural side.
And I'm not so sure he even believes that.
Well, yeah.
So he
knows?
Is, I mean, in my view, he is, whether you call him a flip-flopper or not, I mean, the point is, if you're running as a Republican and you're running for governor of Massachusetts, you're going to take different positions running for the governorship of South Carolina. And the one thing I hope that conservatives would remember, and again, I guess this is the closest thing to making a case for him, he should get some credit for having the gumption and whatever for running against Ted Kennedy. Here's a guy who decided he raised his hand when the Republicans of Massachusetts said, we need someone you know, to walk the plank and run against Ted Kennedy, and he ran a very strong and credible race against Ted Kennedy,
knowing he would be defeated.
But again, right. But also, it was the tightest race I think that Ted Kennedy ever had.
He should get
some credit for his Republican bona fides.
I really want to echo that. You know, there are states and districts in this country where it's easy to be a full bore conservative, where you're rewarded for being an across the board hardline conservative. Massachusetts is not one of those states. This is what we used to call the People's Republic of Massachusetts. Yeah. Not that many years ago. I think you have to recognize they had to make compromises.
And also, they have historically, over the last 40 years, they have historically elected some Republican, moderate to liberal Republican governors.
And what kind of a gubernatorial campaign did Romney run? Was it a moderate campaign, I assume?
It dealt with some of the issues of pro-choice and also support of gay rights, or at least portions of gay rights.
Well, abortion.
Back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago from the National Radio Hall of Fame Gallery. And by the way, the gallery is now open to the public. We're open every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from 10 in the morning to 5 at night. So if you're in the Chicagoland area, stop by and see us. And if you see me walking around the building, say hello. Around the table with us this evening, we have John McDonough. He's our card-carrying, more of a liberal probably than a Democrat. He's a journalist. He's a writer, producer. He's contributed to National Public Radio with just some great great reports over the years, going back to 1976. A former reporter for the Wall Street Journal. He was an arts critic there. And also he is the author of the Encyclopedia of Advertising, which was produced by the Museum of Broadcast Communications and Advertising Age in Duke University. So a longtime friend. And again, a sort of a walking encyclopedia of also radio news. If you're looking for clips or anything about radio news, I mean, John really is he could have easily written the Encyclopedia of Radio as well as advertising. Again, just a real smart guy. Nice to have him with us tonight.
Thank you, Bruce.
John Kochelko also joins us. He's a former Illinois state representative. He was the assessor of Cicero Township, and also he's a political historian, graduate of DePaul University. And the last few times that he has been on this program, he also does great impressions of great American presidents, and he does it in the style of that president. And you do it for Rotary Clubs, and then people can hire you to do that.
Oh,
you
yes.
go to the library,
yeah,
and a little bit later on we'll ask you. You've done a little bit of FDR for us. You've done a little bit of Ronald Reagan for us. And before we go off the air tonight, we're gonna have you pick one more. Who would you like to do?
John F. Kennedy.
Do John F. Kennedy, a little bit of John F. Kennedy.
Right now?
Yeah, right now.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Mm. Ask what you can do for your country.
And when you make these presentations, is it a lecture? Is it a speech? Do you do a Q&A? I mean, what's the shtick?
I come as though this individual is telling his life story. But as though he's aware of what's happened in the United States and in the world since he departed from us in the case of FDR. And so he's looking back and to some extent explaining the decisions that he made, particularly in the Second World War. But talking about his life as well, his life career, some of the things that people may not be aware of in the way their political career developed.
Did you ever hear the skit Bob and Ray did on presidential impersonators? Wally Ballew interviewing a presidential impersonator, but he didn't do any presidents after Grover Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
Tim Krilaitis also joins us.
Did a great Franklin Pierce.
He is the state director of the Illinois Tax Day Tea Party and also active in Will County Tea Party politics, and also is a marketing executive, also a graduate of DePaul University. We're going to take calls in just a moment, but again, since so much of this past week has been about Newt Gingrich's initial volley, and also Rick Perry sort of piling on a little bit as well on Bain Capital and Mitt Romney's conduct while at Bain Capital, which has dominated much of the news of this past week and is likely to dominate much of the campaign that we just referenced, but I'm going to give you an opportunity to do just a little FDR in responding to something that is as contemporary as last week, and that is the challenges of capitalism, whether you believe that the attacks on Bain Capital is an attack on capitalism, and coming from his aristocratic background, how would FDR respond to the criticism of Mitt Romney this past week?
Well, I remember something he said once. He said he was trying to justify his position and said that he says, you know, it is not true that I am a radical. I am a believer in the capitalist system, and I do not breakfast on grilled millionaire.
Let us go to calls. Let's go to Glenn listening to us in Minocqua, Illinois on WLS.
Yeah, hi, Bruce. I just want to comment. I've been a member of the Tea Party just about since it began back in 2009. I've been to quite a few rallies. And just like in 2010, in those elections, I am certain that the Tea Party folks are coming back in 2012. Now, there's more to that race than just the presidency. There's the Senate and there's the House. I think the Republicans will take the Senate, possibly gain in the House. And at this point, even though Michelle Bachmann's out of the race and Rick Santorum's not doing as well as we'd like, our first priority is to remove Barack Obama from the White House. And that's my main concern. The only trouble is with Romney is this. If he does get the nomination, my fear is that we'll almost be getting Democrat light, and that we won't do as much as needs to be done in this country to really roll back the liberalism that just seems to have seeped into every aspect of government and society, going all the way from taxes to social issues. That's the kind of a president I feel we really need, someone that will be as aggressive pushing the conservative agenda as Barack Obama has been in pushing a left-wing agenda.
Do you think that given the rhetoric of this campaign, that Mitt Romney can be the guy to be the salesman for that message?
Well, he's not ideal, but look, as a Tea Party member, I'll take anybody but Barack Obama. It doesn't matter. I'll take Romney. He's not my number one choice. Personally, right now, I plan on voting for Rick Santorum. But if Romney wins, he gets my vote.
How energized are you for 2012?
Very.
Exactly. So the energy in the Tea Party movement, you haven't seen decline. We just have evolved, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm out in Grundy County. We have a Tea Party organization out here that meets periodically. And I can assure you we have a lot of people come out. And Grundy County is a small county population-wise. I think Will County is even stronger. And believe me, people haven't forgotten 2008. And we haven't forgotten what Barack Obama has done to this country in terms of bankrupting the country, trillions in debt. This has got to be stopped.
And there's also some Republican congressional races that in Illinois, primary races.
How many of your Tea Party colleagues voted for Obama 4 years ago?
Sure. Not many.
So it really doesn't change the vote totals then for Obama. Yeah,
it's just a new group of people. Yeah. Joe in Gurnee, Illinois, listening to us on our flagship station. WLS, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I think that Romney has a problem. I don't think that he can win an absolute majority during the primaries, and it's going to end up the conservatives who are still running can force it to a brokered convention in which he's not going to take the nomination.
Because of the proportional voting.
Mm-hmm.
You think it's possible?
There's too many votes elsewhere. He has to have a majority, and he can't get that majority. Whoever is left standing at the end of the day is the one who's going to pick up the 70% of the anti-Romney vote.
John Kuchelko is shaking his head for those listening to us on radio. He's our Republican. He wants to respond to your comment, Joe.
I don't think so. Several of these candidates are running on fumes. They have no money. They're not going to be able to mount an ongoing primary campaign state after state after state. The debates are going to be far less important. I'm not certain that if all the other candidates dropped out, and it was just, say, Newt Gingrich against Mitt Romney, that all those so-called conservative votes are going to coalesce. I think Mitt Romney is plenty conservative. I think he's far more conservative, certainly, than the man we have in the White House today, and that's the ultimate decision people are going to be making in November.
That's all true, but for one thing, the other more conservative candidates do not have to run to win. They have to run to block. That doesn't require the kind of bankroll that is needed to win.
But
stay
in some,
alive
you have to have resources. You have to.
But
have
I think in some of these states, I think the point that that John is making, and this gets back to when you look at South Carolina. You know, South Carolina has been the state, again, since 1980, that has really ratified and really sent the first strong signal, you know, as to who the Republican nominee is going to be. And then the steamroller happens literally just a few days later, and that's in Florida. I mean, it's going to be impossible for any of these candidates, other than Romney, to compete in a state that is so heavily a media market. It's an impossible state. And then when you throw other states in there that are down the road, Ohio and Pennsylvania and Illinois and Michigan, states that by the time that their turn comes, they may be meaningless, but the steamroll, the momentum will be so strong at that particular point. And some of these lesser candidates, I mean, as I think John made a comment, is there will likely be fewer and fewer debates. And the one thing I think that we have to say in this race is that I think the debates have been very meaningful. Just as the debates were meaningful 4 years ago, I think they've been meaningful this year. You know, that's the first wave of, I think, of our presidential process now, which is good.
One of the reasons that I'm enthused about Romney is he is a terrific debater. He is a great I think he's a great public speaker, and I think he will do a bang-up job going against Barack Obama in October in the televised debates. I think he can do an outstanding job. And this is something that people might not have realized before these pre-primary debates.
Well, going to the caller's original question, I don't think there's going to be a brokered convention, but I think there are more proportional primaries this year than there have been in in my recent memory. And And if the Democratic race for the nomination 4 years ago had been through a series of proportional states, I mean, you might have had a brokered convention between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. So it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility. But
is that a good is proportional? That's your preferred way of doing it?
Well, I mean, it does seem to be the most fair. Yeah, it does seem to be the most fair. And it does make conventions meaningful. And we haven't had a meaningful convention in a long time.
I like conventions.
And I like conventions.
Me too. 1-800-723-8289. Back shortly from Chicago. Two months back in Chicago, let's go to Chris in Palatine, Illinois, listening to us on our flagship station, WLS Radio, Cumulus Radio for Chicago. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening. You know, I hear everybody in the Republican Party talking about how they are the Reagan Republican and that they are the true Reagan Republicans. Well, you know, I want a Reagan Republican. I want the Reagan Republican that supported legalizing 4 million illegal aliens, made them productive citizens in the United States. I want the Reagan Republican who raised taxes several times. I want the Reagan Republican who said that capital gains should be taxed at a higher rate than personal income. Where are those Reagan Republicans? Come on, St. Ronnie is your patron saint. Why don't you support his policies?
Also, we could add to that, you look at his record as the governor of California. I mean, if Reagan were running for president now, he would be absolutely castigated for his record as governor of California in who got appointed to the Supreme Court on the issue of pro-choice, on the issue of a lot of issues, including taxes in California. I mean, when you compare Ronald Reagan's record as the governor of California in 1966 for two terms to Mitt Romney, 4 years in Massachusetts, it's night and day. I mean, Reagan is a liberal compared to the way that Romney
might be calling him a California liberal if he was
well,
am I right?
Absolutely.
Well, Reagan exists as a brand today, not a flesh and blood.
That's right. He's a
politician,
brand.
Yeah. And he had been a Democrat before that. So imagine what they would do with the fact that he had been an FDR Democrat,
flip flopper.
That's right. Party switcher.
Yeah. Good point, caller. Let's go to Brian.
And a divorcee as well.
Brian in St. Charles, he is not going to vote Republican if Mitt Romney's the head of the ticket. How come?
I'm just simply not going to hold my nose again for another election and have the Republican Party trot out somebody who is not a Republican by definition of the term Republican, who believes in a limited government within the bounds of the Constitution. Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum are big government Republicans, or some people are politicians, I should say. They have an R behind their names, but they do not vote as Republicans should vote. And if this garbage keeps being put in front of us to vote for, there are a lot of people, if you pay attention to social media, we will not vote for that. And you will have Obama for 4 more years. You guys are ignoring Ron Paul completely.
No,
he doesn't even exist.
No, we just had not got to him because, again, I've said for the last several weeks on this program, I think Ron Paul should run for president as a third-party candidate. I mean, there's people out there who believe if he feels strongly about that his position should be out there and articulated. He dominates a lot of the debates. He has very loyal supporters. I don't think his loyal supporters should just go away. If he feels strongly about it, let him run. Let him be the third-party candidate. I think mathematically he would probably tip the race to Obama, but in that particular case, I think if he feels real strongly about it, and he's got supporters that feel real strongly about it, and he can get on the ballot in enough states that he possibly could win, get out there. Mix it up.
Let me interject here, Bruce. We're Republicans, even the ones on your panel, are ignoring some fundamental issues of what it means to be a Republican. We had a Republican House and Senate, or at least the Republicans in the House and Senate, stand by while the NDAA 2012 was passed, allowing for indefinite detention of American citizens without trial or writ of habeas corpus. And these are the type of things that in the news media is derelicting their duty in reporting this to the average person. You have a bunch of uneducated people going to the polls without this knowledge. And Mitt Romney has purposely ducked this question from various reporters. Santorum and Gingrich are both in favor of strengthening the Patriot Act vis-a-vis the NDAA.
All right, Stan.
What do the Republicans on the panel have to say about
Stan,
that?
Stan, hold on. Let's John Kochelko respond, and we'll let everybody respond to it.
There are two buildings that once stood in New York City that aren't there anymore. And I think that being a Republican, one thing that's important about being a Republican is taking those steps necessary to see that that kind of attack never happens again. So we're in a different era. We have to do things to safeguard our nation's security.
But we should give up our liberty so that attack doesn't
No,
happen
we have
again.
To preserve our liberty. We have to protect our liberty against those who would destroy it
okay,
from outside.
So by my little children being frisked at the airport and strip searched at the airport, how does that protect me from a terrorist?
Because of the fact that there was aircraft that were used to destroy those buildings and that were potentially targeted at the White House and the Capitol building. Imagine if those had been successful. Imagine if the Capitol building had been struck by one of those airliners or the White House.
Go ahead, Brian.
Children carrying bombs on aircraft, or grandmothers carrying bombs on aircraft.
Well, you know, if you're a terrorist, you're probably not going to have someone from Central Casting who's going to be wearing, you know, Arab garb and carrying a machine gun. They're going to use someone who's going to be unobtrusive. So, unfortunately, it's necessary to take these steps.
John, let's Brian.
Protections given to us. Yes.
Let's get our liberal guest and also Tim Carlitis to sort of weigh in on the same issue of the issues of the Patriot Act, which have not been discussed very much in recent months and recent years. You're right.
That's a dilemma. The month I was born, in April of 1942, that was the month that the United States government began interning the Japanese on the West Coast. And this is sort of held up as the gold standard of American violation of its own principles. Agreed? I mean, I know very few people who would defend that. But in a way, I can see why it was done. And in very much the same way, I can see why certainly in the weeks and months after 9/11, there was a very swift reaction to clamp down and sort of set aside civil liberties in favor of security. But that was 11 years ago now. And none of the airport search mechanisms seems to have stopped anybody. The acts of terrorism that have been interrupted, the one or two that occurred on airlines, were stopped by other passengers, the shoe bomber.
On that note, we are out of time. Caller, thanks very much. John McDonough, Tim Carlitis, and John Kuchelko have been with us in hour number one. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. And if you're listening to us on radio, the Big Three will be back after Network News. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8289. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Republican John Kuchelko, liberal Democrat John McDonough, and Tim Carlitis of the Tea Party here in Illinois. And the phone lines again, 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's btb@museum.tv. We've been talking about the race for the Republican nomination, and my thought that it's probably all over. We'll wait until the people in South Carolina actually vote later this week, and that should set it in place. But again, historically, at least since 1980, the Republican nominee usually comes out of the South Carolina primary. They lock it up, and no matter what the media may say and all these suggestions of scenarios, it's basically to just keep everybody excited. But the reality is that this race really could be slammed shut, and it's going to be Mitt Romney, and we'll know it all by February 1st. Which leads us, and we have a good group with us this evening to sort of sort through whether or not the process itself is good, and also to speak to the issue of what came out of the Bain Capital castigation of Mitt Romney. Do you think that the questions that Newt Gingrich has raised, the issues that he has raised, are they important issues, and do you think they have political staying power down the road? They may hurt Mitt Romney. They're meant to hurt Mitt Romney. But do you think that's a majoritarian position? Do you think the majority of the American people have that same antagonism towards successful business people?
No. I think that the people who hate the rich are already going to be voting for President Obama. I don't think it moves a single vote. I think that Gingrich is desperate. He's using anything, and as a result, he's using arguments that are unseemly for a supposedly conservative Republican to be hammering Mitt Romney for having been a successful businessman.
Let me expand that as we get John and Tim to weigh in on it. I have always made the point in this program since I've been doing it is that no matter what happens in a general election, if you go through the process and a party is not nominating someone who is way beyond the mainstream, and we don't have that this year, we've really never really had that. The closest thing to that was maybe at a time when we thought that Ross Perot had some mathematical way to make it to the White House. But what happens is when the conventions are over next summer, the Republicans are going to have 45% of the vote. The Democrats are going to have 45% of the vote. And elections in this country are really determined by the 10% that are not politically inclined. They're not the people that listen to this program. They're not the people that watch Meet the Press, that read any of the political blogs. They're people who are apolitical, but their vote counts just as much as anybody at this table. And if you can get 5.1% of that 10%, you're going to be the president of the United States. And these are the people that people will spend hundreds of millions of dollars to try to get with their television commercials. And those commercials, for the most part, have nothing to do with issues. They have to do with perceptions and reality versus perception. And I want to spend a moment because, John, you've studied propaganda and political commercials over the years. The images of Barack Obama and what he stands for, whatever that means in your view, mm-hmm. and the image of Mitt Romney and what he stands for, again, in your view, how would you suggest that the great 10% that's being fought for, isn't it going to be a lot easier to demagogue and paint a very unpleasant picture of Mitt Romney than it might be for Barack Obama?
Well, that's possibly true. His wealth is an issue, but he hasn't been particularly reckless or unseemly with his wealth. There's no indication that he goes out and buys $10,000 shower curtains for his house and, you know, that kind of thing. He's been, I think, fairly circumspect in his lifestyle, certainly. I don't think his money or necessarily even his business background is necessarily going to work that badly against him. Because first of all, the 45% on either side, that's where the demagoguery is going to be coming from on the extreme ends of those 45%. Those people in the middle are probably least subject to demagoguery and probably more nuanced in the casting of their votes. So I think that middle ground that you
would
talk
you acknowledge
about,
it, would you acknowledge that maybe that percent, however, is really not voting on issues? They're voting more on imagery than anything else.
Well,
because they may be the least astute of the electorate out there. Do you agree with that, Tim?
I feel, you know, maybe if it was a 20 or 2008 election, that might be a point. But I think those people are going to look around and say, how am I doing? How are my neighbors doing? And no matter whether Barack wants to heal the waters and recede the seas and put up the foam pillars again and promise everything, he's got a record now. And it's abysmal. And that's what those people are going to make.
But it's abysmal about, largely because he's faced a divided Congress for the last 2 years.
That Congress is a firewall.
Well,
that was a historic election.
He promised national health policy, and he delivered it basically right out of the Heritage Foundation. So you know, what's the conservative ground?
John?
Well, he delivered it in spite of the fact that most Americans didn't want it. It wasn't something people were worried about the economy. Let me just say, you know, Bruce,
I speak to the issue of my question about the imagery. Though.
I agree with you that both parties have a base of 40 to 45% of the vote, and they fight over that 10 to 15% that's in the middle. But my thinking of that is that those folks are more conservative than they are liberal, and that's why Republicans win more presidential elections historically than Democrats do. I think that there are folks there that don't want to identify themselves as Republicans or identify as conservatives, but basically that's where they come down. And so if you run a credible candidate, and I think that Mitt Romney will be a credible candidate, based on the failure of this president, and he's not going to be able to get by blaming it all on George Bush, which he and his supporters are inclined to constantly harp about the fact that this is all Bush's fault. That's not going to work in 2012.
Well,
looking at the last since 1980, the candidate that has won that swing vote, if you will, or the deciding vote, you had Ronald Reagan, an affable actor,
right,
that people knew, he was likable. Then you had George Bush, preppy. He had been vice president of the United States, so they knew him. But he was preppy, Eastern establishment, although he went to Texas. Most people thought of him as an Eastern guy. Then you had Bob Dole, the war hero, but somewhat of a political hack in Washington, but a war hero. You know,
sure.
Do well in the general election. Then you had George Bush, the governor of Texas, again, affable, not the sharpest knife in the tool shed, but people likable. And then you had John McCain, another war hero, sort of a political hack from a different perspective in Washington, and the people rejected him. Back shortly. What are they going to do this year? Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. So the question I was going to ask in this particular race with Mitt Romney, doesn't Romney come across more of the as like the George Bush candidate insofar as the perception is concerned? Preppy?
The first one. I think
he's got a little bit of actually a little bit of both. My point that I'm trying to make here is that the candidates are he doesn't have the war hero element, which and again those happen to be. It's interesting. The war heroes were the losing candidates. The war heroes were the losing candidates, with the exception of Bush. The senior was somewhat of a war hero himself. But what I'm saying is the perception of Romney, preppy, wealthy, silver spoon in his mouth,
well,
easy life. So the masses don't reject that type of person. They didn't reject John F. Kennedy.
No.
They didn't reject
Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
The masses sort of like wealthy
aristocratic
people.
Wealth goes over well again people
and they like John Kerry.
People remember the George Ooh. Bush senior who lost in 92. They forget that in 1988 he carried 40 states. He had 55% of the vote when he won re-election the first time. So that preppiness and they really hammered him with that. I can remember Ann Richards really excoriating
poor
Bush.
George.
Oh, born with a silver foot in his – and that's the election he won with 40 states.
That's right.
So, I think that Romney – again, just looking at his performance in the debates, I think he presents himself very well. I think he's very effective. I think he'll be a great speaker. I think he'll be a good candidate.
So my point is there really isn't too much more than what the Democratic machine – can do to Mitt Romney, other than the fact that he happens to be he's not the incumbent president, he's not a sitting governor, he's not a war hero, he's not the governor of Texas. He happens to be a business guy who has fired people, so it brings up the whole issue of what does Bain Capital do? Well, it did more than just fire people. It created wealth. It created companies. It saved jobs.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that he's going to be running on Bain Capital's record.
Well, he's not, but the Democrats might
well,
be running.
But see,
on
the Dem- the Democrats
he doesn't have another. Re- he doesn't.
A the Democrats. The Democrats will target the business interests that sort of collapsed the economy back in 2008. They're still the arch villains of the business world. B, I don't think people hate wealthy people. I don't think they envy them, and I don't think we're in the midst of a class warfare issue. I think they simply feel that they should pay a little bit more since they can afford it so easily. So it's not a question of the United States living beyond its means. It's a question of the United States declining to pay its bills because we're reluctant to tax the people who are most capable of paying extra money.
And
the polls support that.
God bless you. You're a smart man, but I just think that's a perversion. To say that we're not taxing people enough, we got a spending problem. I mean, government is overspending. Don't tell me that they're going to turn around and we're going to run trillions of dollars in debt and we're going to blame the citizen who isn't paying enough because he happens to be wealthy, and we're not going to look at the politicians that have rolled us into – what is it? It's over $16 trillion in debt now and over, $100 trillion of unfunded mandates? I mean, and you're going to say the rich guy could pay a little more? How about those people being responsible? Once they're responsible, we'll let them take another 1%.
We have a spending problem and we have a revenue problem.
Well, correct the spending
problem. It's a
problem
on both ends.
I don't buy the notion we have a revenue problem. I don't buy the
notion.
You can confiscate all
the
wealth from the rich and it
wouldn't
solve our problem.
Highest corporate.
And you know, there's a certain hypocrisy to the president flying into Chicago and raising millions of dollars from wealthy contributors. This is a party that has worshipped at the temple of the Kennedy family for all of my adult life. And for them to go around parading about them being the party of the common man, the Republicans are the party of the millionaires and billionaires. It's just not going to work. It's just not going to work.
And Bill Clinton made more.
Those are ancient images. I mean, going back to Hoover.
But Bill Clinton. I mean, one of the things that made Bill Clinton unique, and one of the things that made him a two-term president, was Bill Clinton was the guy that decided he was going to play the Republican game. He reached out. He brought a lot of that of that new corporate money, you know, to his coffers. And the $1 billion that the president is going to make, he's not getting those $1 billion from Joe and Mabel, average citizen, like he did the last time.
Wall Street contributed more money to Barack Obama in 2008 than it did to John McCain. He got more Wall Street money than McCain did. So making this argument is just not going to work.
So did they get what they wanted?
My point is that you can't make the argument that the Republican Party is plugged into Wall Street and try to use that as something.
Well,
to,
the Republican
to
Party is the party that's blocking any effort to attack the fiscal problems from the revenue side
that the government created.
Yeah, it's blocking any effort that's going to harm our economy
by lowering taxes.
You were criticizing a do nothing Congress. What do you think of a do nothing Congress, Tim?
What I see now is I look at the midterm elections as a firewall. It went up to because it was a historic election. They like to glaze over that. If that was a Democratic victory like that against a sitting president, they would have had this guy dead and buried now. But since he's in the hip pocket of the Democrats, they always want to ignore that. And what I think is that's a firewall that went up. So what they're doing is they're basically attacking that firewall. They're trying to make something and pervert the story of what they did in Congress, because what they did is stop a president that was out of control.
There was a story in the New York Times today about Boehner returning and to Washington. And now Boehner and the Republicans are presumably going to try and pass some affirmative legislation so that they have something to run on as a Congress.
They've been doing that for the past year. They passed a number of pieces of legislation that died in the Democratic-controlled Senate.
Well, that's the point. Can anything get passed? If something is going to be signed by Obama, then the Republicans are going to oppose it.
But John, what do you say to the person that says, for the first 2 years of the Obama administration, he had Congress,
mm-hmm.
he had both houses, so all the things that he wanted to do, he could have done. And of all the long list of things that really should be done, including dealing with illegal immigration, mm-hmm. which to him is like a third rail, as it is for the Republicans as well. He could have done a lot, but the one thing that he chose to do, he chose health care.
Mm-hmm.
And as Tim, I think, has correctly said, he picked that issue. That was going to be the issue that up or down he was going to win or lose with.
Mm-hmm.
He rolled the dice, and that's what the American people rebelled against.
But in a sense, that's what they voted for in the election.
Voted for.
I don't think so. I don't think 2008 was not a referendum on federal health care program.
Point. He misread it. He miscalculated. He went for it. And he got a wipeout in the midterms.
I think he's been criticized for not pivoting to jobs when that became a crisis. But he came into office clearly committed to a national health and insurance reform.
But you said wasn't the job crisis with him on day one?
That's right.
In retrospect,
that's right.
Yeah.
That was
he inherited, according to him.
Well, the financial
even if he did inherit it, if that was the main issue. Get people jobs first.
Well, wait a minute.
Get them their
health
care.
The financial issue was the crisis when he came into office and saving the financial system. Unemployment rate was still, not at any critical.
It wasn't as bad as it's become since.
Yeah, it went up.
Perhaps
it went up
as
the consequences of the financial collapse seeped into the system.
But at that particular point, would you acknowledge at that particular moment in our history, that was a bipartisan issue? That really, you had a Republican president.
Oh, you mean the TARP and everything? Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean,
yeah.
that was everybody was in that boat.
Yeah, oh, of course.
Everybody and a lot of people held their nose and voted for it.
That's right.
I think, frankly, if John McCain, in the closing days of the campaign, if he would have understood economics a little more than he did, because he said it wasn't his strong suit. Mm-hmm. Not exactly the smartest thing to say when that's the major issue. Had he come off against TARP, he probably would have beat Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Against TARP? But yeah. Then what would have happened to the financial system?
The election would have taken place. He might have flip-flopped when it was over.
Oh,
I'm just saying, by coming out and saying what he did, he was a get-along, go-along guy, and that was not his strength. That's not why a lot of people like John McCain.
The Secretary of the Treasury was really functioning as the effective president of the United States.
Absolutely.
In that period, you know?
So what I'm saying is, from that particular at that particular moment in time, what was done was done. Mm-hmm. People can criticize it, but had it not been done, we would have been in far worse shape than we are now.
In a way, I see a lot of the Republican rhetoric leveled against Obama, that he's a socialist, that he's a radical socialist, that class warfare. The socialist accusation is an interesting one because, in a sense, part of it is, in fact, true. Because all mature industrial economies in the Western economic world are mixed economies of entrepreneurial capitalism and socialism. They are free enterprise systems, but they have socialist or social programs as a
So
cushion.
He should be proud of his social...
The point is
wise leaders are doing whatever they can to bury the socialist part of it back to a private enterprise economy, which is the only way to success.
No, there are always going to be mixed economies, I think, as far forward as I can see. But to talk about class warfare, well, let me go back to socialism. Socialism is a smear in the context of American political rhetoric. It's like calling somebody a red in 1955.
There's no question about it. We'll continue it in just a moment. Back shortly. 1-800-723-8289. From Tyler, Texas to Elkton, Ohio, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. John Kochelko is here. He is our Republican. Our Democrat is John McDonough. I think they prefer conservative and liberals as opposed to party labels. Tim Krilaitis, he is proud to be a Tea Party guy. And he is also active in Will County politics. That's western rural Illinois, just west of the city of Chicago. A lot of people on the line. Let's go to Iowa City, Iowa, where Mike is listening to us on Sirius XM satellite radio tonight. Go ahead.
Well, good evening, Bruce. Thank you very much for taking my call. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Very good. Are you connected with the university there at all?
No, sir. Actually, I'm a truck driver, just passing through.
Okay, very good. Well, nice to hear from you tonight.
That's why I have my Sirius satellite.
Good.
The point I want to make is I think there's actually three points that we're missing here, and all three points are going to lead to why I don't believe Romney can win. If he wins the nomination, he will lose to Obama, and here's why. You have to build coalitions, and Romney cannot build that coalition. And the other issue is the Ron Paul issue, but it is not Ron Paul. It is the message that Ron Paul is speaking, and it's resonating with people, and that message is building coalitions. And I'll give you New Hampshire for an example. Do you know who took second place in the Democrat primary in New Hampshire?
Ron Paul.
With a write-in, that's correct. Hardcore Democrats actually wrote in Ron Paul in the Democrat primary in New Hampshire rather than vote for Obama. He won the majority of the independents, and he came in second with registered Republicans. And this demonizing Ron Paul is demonizing the message, and the message is going to win the next election.
By the way,
and that's spending.
All right.
Fiscal responsibility.
I want to just say, I have not demonized Ron Paul. And in fact, I have encouraged him to run. I believe that when you are touching the nerve of whether it's a Republican or a Democratic Party, you have a responsibility to those supporters to continue to run if you have a mechanism to do so. He does have a mechanism. A mechanism can be in place. I listened to the rhetoric of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Many of those people who are out there the ones who are not the avowed anarchists. You're not going to get them. But a lot of the rhetoric of the Occupy Wall Street people are people that are saying a lot of the same things that Ron Paul is saying. It's a distrust of government. It's a question of how the money is being used. It's a very, and when you ask the national news media, they say, well, it's his foreign policy. They criticize his foreign policy. There's a lot of people that think the United States is sticking its nose into parts of the world where they should not be sticking their nose. They believe that troops should come home, not only from Afghanistan and Iraq, but, 150 other regions of the world where we have troops staying. They don't think that's wise to do. They think that, the crack laws are unjustly, measured in this country, and that too many people are being incarcerated because of the crack cocaine, the discrepancy in the way we deal with drugs and other issues. So Ron Paul, and obviously some of the biggest applause lines that he has received at some of these debates early on were because of his foreign policy. There's a lot of people that, he is, in my view, I think he's naive that we can have the foreign policy that he articulates, but I certainly believe that he has earned the right to let the American people have a choice. Let it be a three-way race. If he loses, he loses. Maybe 4 years from now, the person gets a few more votes. I think right now, which John alluded to a few moments ago, I think the reason why he may not do it this year is that he's 76 years old. He may be tired, although he certainly doesn't look tired. But I think like any 76-year-old father, he's probably a little bit concerned about whether or not, if he chose to run as an independent, what repercussions would there be for his son, who's a freshman senator from Kentucky, who he may feel is the heir apparent to his message running in a Republican primary 4 or 8 years from now, when maybe the country will see him in a different
view. Are you suggesting, and the caller suggesting, that he could take votes from the Republican, from the liberal and the conservative elements in the country?
I do.
And put together a kind of coalition himself?
I do. Okay. I do. Now, again, I personally don't think that's a majoritarian position, but as I've said many times on this show, I don't think it's important for you to vote for the winner. I think you should vote when you go in to vote, no matter what it is, what office. You should come home from voting, look in the mirror, and be proud of yourself.
So a Ron Paul candidacy would inflict equal damage on both sides of the partisan
and would be
divide.
Good, and would be good for the body politic.
Okay.
Because the people, many of those who are supporters of the Tea Party movement, who like Ron Paul, many of the people who were out there, protesting in the streets, is it the majoritarian position? No. Should that position be heard? Should it be exercised? Should someone be able to go out and be proud of who they vote for? I think people who would vote for Ron Paul would be proud of that vote. They may hold their nose and vote for Obama because he's blown the opportunity that was given to him on a pedestal. They may not like Mitt Romney because of his positions. But you know what? People should vote for who they really want. And forget about the polls and who's ahead and who's not and who's electable and who's not electable. The people who decide who's electable are the people who vote.
Correct. One thing
I'm off my soapbox.
Yeah, one thing I did want to mention to you about Ron Paul is there is a libertarian movement within the Tea Party. A lot of them have been at Tea Parties. A lot are active. One thing Ron Paul is a patriot. And I sincerely believe that he is not going to run for a third party because he sees the consequences of what will happen if he chooses to do so.
Do you share his libertarian views?
In some aspects, yeah. But and when he talked about coalescing voters around Romney, he can't do that. I can tell you I'm a right-wing evangelical Tea Partier that clings to his guns and his Bible, and I will support Mitt Romney till the end in an election against Obama.
I think Ron Paul understands that if he were to do what you say, that it would almost certainly reelect Barack Obama. I think it would be the Ross Perot factor once again. I believe that the first president
but
Bush
every,
would
have Bruce
but
is
every,
saying it would pull equally. But, or but every, would pull from
I,
both
I'm
sides.
Not, I'm not so sure that it would pull equally. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is that every independent voice who has ever come before the American people gets to that particular point. You know what? I'm not going to win. I'm talking about a responsibility to the voters, and it's not about winning.
But
it's about continuing to carry the message. It's demonstrating that you are so serious about your message, you're carrying the message. You want to be the vessel for those frustrated people, be they right of center or left center, that when November election day comes around in November, their voice has been heard. Because what's going to happen right now is as soon as the nomination is over and the lid goes on, the coverage, there's going to be no more coverage of Ron Paul anymore. And I'm saying is at this particular moment, I think there should be that voice should be heard. There should be people challenging whether or not we should go to war every time, you know, regardless of whether it's a Republican president or a Democratic president. I like the idea of Congress declaring war, not presidents going to war by whim. And I would say the same thing whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. That's what the country was supposed to be, and I think Ron Paul is dead serious in wanting to do that. And frankly, I think if he really believes in what he says, he shouldn't worry about his son's future. He shouldn't worry about his future. He's not running for re-election in Texas anymore. But I got to tell you, if he doesn't continue to run for president, no one's going to be covering what he says because they will not care.
I do think, though, that he has to be concerned about the nation's future.
That's exactly, and he is.
I think most of his voters are primarily concerned about our budgetary problems, the deficit, government regulation. And I think he'd have to realize that if he would create a situation where Barack Obama is reelected, that would be exactly the opposite of everything that he is fighting for and that his constituency is fighting for.
Well, you know what? The point is that he can still do it. You know, that same philosophy was held in 1980. In 1980, when Jimmy Carter ran against Ronald Reagan. Let's remember, there was another guy in that race.
John Anderson.
John Anderson was in the race. And people would have said, "Oh, well, John Anderson's in the race. Oh, it's just gonna give it to Jimmy Carter." It didn't. Let the voters decide. Let the voters decide that the independent voice, whether it's John Anderson or Ron Paul, is really minuscule. Put up or shut up. Take it all the way to the end, and then you can clearly say, I have won a three-way race, and I've come up with a majority. That's what Ronald Reagan had. The reason Reagan could say he had a mandate in 1980 was that it was two against one, and he won. And I think it would be great to have a president again who has that type of mandate, because I think if he has that type of mandate, he's probably bringing along members of Congress, or they should certainly get the message that the vast majority, not just we don't want a plurality. We want a majoritarian president, and that's one way to do it. But don't do it by taking the passion that exists out there, again, left and right, and saying to them, "Hey, this election is over. We don't care what you want. We want you to hold the nose, and we're going to ask you to vote for the lesser of two evils." We've had that choice for far too long in the United States.
Bruce, you
said it's time for Ron Paul to run as an independent if he doesn't get the Republican nomination.
And you said earlier that if he did, he'd probably throw the election to Obama. So, and
good.
I'm assuming that you consider the election of Obama this year to be a less apocalyptic event than my two colleagues at this table.
I do. Yes, I do. And I'll probably be lynched for what I just said by my listeners, because again, they know that I'm not a big fan of his policies. But the point is,
the country will survive.
The country will survive everything. Back shortly.
Control that.
Bruce Dumont back. John, you were making the point you made earlier in the broadcast, but for people that perhaps have just tuned in, we were talking about, spent a portion of the first part of the program this evening, talking about whether or not Newt Gingrich's attack on Bain Capital and this 27-minute movie that's out there and all of the anti-Romney feeling that Newt is trying to stir up, whether by stirring it up now he inoculates Mitt Romney from further the Democrats will definitely bring it up.
Sure.
But will it be old news come August and September and Thus, could Newt be doing Mitt a favor?
Well, I think that is possible. Yeah.
I was just hearkening back to the damage that Ted Kennedy did to Jimmy Carter when Kennedy tried to take the nomination away from him in 1980, and that was a pretty fierce battle between Kennedy and Carter. I don't know in my lifetime that I'd ever seen an incumbent president attacked at the primary process as he was at that time. And I'm
Reagan and Ford. Reagan and Ford in 76. Not on as personal a level as Ted Kennedy did it.
Yeah, could you argue then
that really it was Ted Kennedy that's responsible for the election of Ronald Reagan?
Well, in a way, yes. I mean, that's if you accept that Kennedy did so much damage to Carter. But you argue that
Kennedy ran a very inept campaign. Yeah. I remember he was interviewed by, I think, Roger Mudd. He couldn't come up with a coherent explanation of why he was running for president of the United States.
That was self-inflicted.
You read it, and it's incoherent. Right. I don't buy the idea. Carter was headed for defeat regardless of whether Kennedy softened him
up. But he gave
a
great speech, no more of this, no more that, and no more Carter. Remember
we got a guy.
Well, I remember that he refused to
wouldn't even appear on the platform
with him at the convention in New York, which didn't endear him to the Carter administration.
But if you talked
to veteran Carter people, even today, they despise Ted Kennedy. They do
believe
believe that Ted Kennedy was part of that defeat, mm-hmm. even though there were certainly enough self-inflicted decisions made that made him such an ineffective president.
And I think in the case of Gingrich, I think what Gingrich is doing is stupid. I think he's a man, he's bitter, and I think that it shows through. I think that he's lashing out at Romney, and I don't think it's going to have any effect.
But he just got beaten up. I mean, I don't want to say what he said. He got beaten up badly in Iowa. I mean, every TV spot, the packs
that
for
was coming
for
in from
Romney.
Every direction. Well, all the other
and Ron ready. Paul, they were all going after him. So I mean, a guy gets beaten up. I mean, you expect him to fight back a little bit.
Well, he seems to be an eternal optimist. I heard him on Meet the Press this morning, and he was asked about the conservative convention down in Texas that has given this approval to Santorum, and he was talking about how well it's only the first vote, and he gave me the impression that this is a continuing process down there in Texas, and more votes are going to be taken. That puzzled me a little bit.
He also talked about a couple of key people in South Carolina who are going to be for him. Mm-hmm. And by the way, in case you just tuned in, the Real Clear Politics polls out of South Carolina, these are averages of the five major polls. Romney is in the lead at 26%. Newt Gingrich in second place at 22%, certainly within striking distance. Ron Paul and Rick Santorum basically tied at around 15%. Rick Perry and John Hutsman at about 6%. Let's play a quick round of what if, because we've said at the beginning of the campaign or the beginning of the show that it looks like Romney really could wrap it up, and if you win South Carolina, you generally end up being the Republican nominee. At least that's the case since 1980. What if there is an upset? What if Newt is able to upset Romney? Is he going to be able to ride that for a week and pull off the same type of thing in Florida, where I don't think he has any structure and no money to go on TV?
No, and I do
hollow
not,
victory.
I do not think the Republican Party is going to nominate Newt Gingrich for president of the United States. I just don't see that happening. I think you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. And Newt Gingrich, his tenure as Speaker was so disastrous that his own conservative Republicans removed him from office. I just don't see it happening.
Kyle in Merrillville, Tennessee, listening to us on what station are you listening to us on tonight?
WOKI.
Okay, very good. Nice to hear from you tonight. Go ahead.
Bruce, I want to thank you for recommending that Ron Paul run as third party, because I support Ron Paul. I have done a lot of study on the candidates, and if Ron Paul is not the Republican candidate, then when it comes, well, I'm going to vote for him in the primaries, but if he doesn't make it as the candidate, then I will write him in. So, the Republican candidate, if he is not the Republican candidate, will not get my vote.
Hmm. Okay. So if he ran as an independent, you'd vote for him as an independent?
Most definitely.
So, again, feeling good about your vote is more important than defeating Barack Obama.
Yes. I am so upset at the Republican Party for they have pretty much made Ron Paul a nobody. And, you know, if they want to make him
Why do you say that, sir?
Well, they don't give him any credit. You know, whenever somebody from the RNC is interviewed on the air, they don't even mention Ron Paul. They mention, you know, Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, and even
Joe Biden. You're right. There is sort of an insular distaste and a dislike for Ron Paul, but I'm sure it's mutual. But again, you are correct.
I don't think the party establishment wants itself associated with Ayn Rand too much.
No, they don't. They don't want to be. They don't want to be associated with that. But again, Ron Paul has been invited to the debates. He does well in the debates. He hasn't won any primaries. Hasn't won any caucuses. He's got to win something. That's also important.
On that note,
we are out of time. John Kochalko, John McDonough, and Tim Carlitis, they've all been with us this night. Thanks very much. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio in Chicago. Our thanks to Tom Vercruz, Dan Dorfman, and Khalil Palil for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.